All right, why don't we go ahead and pick up. So, good afternoon, and thank you for coming to this session. Warning contains graphic material. I have been doing presentations since 1993, and I will say this is still my favorite cheesy presentation title. So, this is the usual who am I stuff. I operate as Hyperword Services, and I have been doing this since 1979, so I'd rather not do the math. But I got involved with online help, and I've been involved and am certified in Flare, Mimic, something called VisiApps, which has absolutely nothing to do with why we're here. It's an app, a mobile app development tool. Basically, I've been doing this for a while. And I like to think that one of the benefits of that time has been that I've made at least most of the basic silly mistakes. And I'll talk about them as we go forward, my theory being make your own mistakes, don't repeat mine. And then tell me about them, because I collect horror stories for use at conferences, and my favorite horror stories are the ones that happen to you, for obvious reasons. So, what are we going to talk about today? We're all here because we work with graphics in some form or other. Could be screenshots. That's probably, I'm guessing, about 80 to 90% of what you do. They could be flowcharts. They could be line art. They could be photographs. But we work with graphics, and the problem is that we often use them less efficiently than we could, especially for those of us who come from Word. We develop a lot of bad habits in Word, and sometimes they carry over into what we do. So what I want to do is talk a little bit about the basics and then talk about some features in Flare that can fix those efficiency problems, that can make you more efficient, make you more effective, and make you more flexible going forward in how you work with your graphics. So what I'll discuss, as I say, is basic graphics concepts and operations, and then some of the advanced and unusual features in Flare, because most of the graphics features in Flare are concentrated where you would expect to find them, in the insert image dialog box, for example. But there's some other features floating around in the style sheet editor and in the target editor that may be worth a look, and we'll take a look at those. So starting off with the basics, and quick poll, how many of you are new to Flare? Say, within a year? Okay. How many of you worked with graphics in Word? Okay. How many of you make hissing noises when people talk about Word? Okay. Just checking. Word is actually a very powerful tool if it's used correctly. The problem is it's often not used correctly, and it can be kind of clunky. But the problem is, in order to get around that clunkiness, we develop some bad habits, and I include myself in that we, that we carry over into Flare. So the first thing I want to talk about is file types, basic file types. And we've got two. They're known as rasters and vectors. Rasters are also sometimes known as bitmaps, which gets confusing because we actually have a graphic file format called a BMP, which is a bitmap. But basically, here's the difference. A raster, you're painting with pixels. You guys can read that as well as I can. With vectors, you're drawing with vectors. Okay, this is stating the obvious. What this really means is that a raster is like taking a piece of window screen and putting it down on top of a white sheet of paper and then putting little drops of color in each one of the squares. And when you step back, you've got a picture. So it's little drops of color. A vector is for mathematical formulas. A vector says, draw a line 2 inches long starting at this point and going to 0 degrees. In other words, draw a line going this way. So it's pretty straightforward. When do we use these things? Well, we usually, goes in tight, use rasters for online outputs. And again, it's a grid of dots of different color, which means that we have almost unlimited color choices to work with. At the risk of going through the back-in-the-day stories, I will just say that when I started, we had 16 colors, and going to 256 colors was really cool. You know, now nobody remembers those days except to laugh about them. But we can get into trouble if we try to push things too far, like an almost infinite number of colors. But problem is, and you've probably all done this, you take a screenshot or you take a shot of a component of the screen, and then you realize, oops, it's too small. So you enlarge it. And you notice how it, when you do that, it gets blurry. Because the problem is you're trying to make each pixel bigger. But pixels aren't designed to be made bigger. And the borders blur a little bit. So your overall image blurs. What a lot of tools will do is add pixels to try to make up for the blurriness. The problem is the pixels are inserted randomly because your graphics tool doesn't know where the pixels should go unless you have some option for specifying where the pixels will go, and most of our graphics tools don't offer that. So the problem is the image degrades because you just get these little blobs inserted. And if you shrink the image, since we can't shrink the size of a pixel, your authoring tool has to remove pixels at random. And if you've ever taken a screenshot and you shrink it and all of a sudden all the menu labels look broken, the text looks broken, that's what's going on. So the answer here is you want to try to, if you're taking screenshots, you want to try to get them as close to the actual size as possible and then control them through FLIR. And I'll get to that. All right, vectors are commonly used for print. They are, as I say, shapes defined by mathematical formulas. They are almost infinitely scalable. Does anybody here remember The Eye of the Tiger? This is a graphic, not the movie. Okay, when Adobe first came out with SVG, scalable vector graphics, one of the examples that they showed was the head of a tiger. And as you zoomed in on the eye, the pupil, as you got close enough, became the head of a tiger. And you could zoom in on that. And as you got close enough, the pupil became the head of a tiger. It was a little weird. It was like something out of Alice in Wonderland. But their point was infinite scalability, and it worked. Right? We don't need this. Or I should say, almost none of us need this level of scalability, but we do have it. The problem is, if you have a range of colors, you'd rather use a raster. So, all right, that's great. What formats are available? Is this making sense, by the way? Any questions so far? Okay. What formats do we have? Well, on the raster side, and I'm thinking specifically in FLIR now, where you say insert graphic or insert image, and it's going to give you a number of options. The three main options are GIF or GIF. I still don't know how to pronounce this. JPEG and PNG, or PNG, which stands for Portable Network Graphics, and was a format that was invented in the late 90s, I believe, because of a lawsuit over GIF. Plus, we've got older formats that FLIR supports, like BMP and TIFF. They work, but don't use them because they're old formats. They go way, way back into the 90s. They don't scale well. They don't shrink well. They're just big, bulky, and clunky. On the vector side, we've got SVG, Scalable Vector Graphics, plus the older formats, the EPS, Encapsulated PostScript, and the WMF, Windows Metafile. So, okay, you've got a bunch of options. Which one should you use? Well, theoretically, you should use GIF or JPEG or PNG for your online outputs, SVG, Scalable Vector Graphics, or EPS for print. And this works. This has been the habit for years, for decades. It works fine. What I'm going to suggest, though, is this. Think about using PNG for everything. And the reason for this, a couple of reasons, actually. The big reason is a management reason, that now you only have one file format to manage rather than two or three. That's one thing. And the common complaint here is that, well, PNG looks fine online, but what happens when you print it? It's not going to look as good as an SVG or a TIFF would, SVG or an EPS. Problem is, we know that because we'll see it. The thing is, will your users notice? And the answer often is no. As long as the graphics, as long as the PNG file image does not look broken up or blurry or just ugly when you print, it often works fine. Users won't notice the difference. We may notice, but users won't. So why not? It simplifies my life. It can simplify your life. Do any of you do this now? Use PNG for everything? All right, good. Have you had any problems with it, especially quality and print output? That's interesting. What problems have you had?
Rendering type.
Rendering type? Okay. The image will be blurry.
When you print it, mm-hmm. You
print,
especially
if you have a resizing. Mm-hmm. Yep. And Ray in the back? Okay, so we had about 5 or 6 people, I think, say yes, they have had problems. And the problems tended to be either blurry rendering or some sort of an artifact left over between the ping and the background when you bring the image into capture. Did I get that right, Ray? Okay. And it may not work for you. You may have problems, although I noticed that most of you didn't. I came to this conclusion about 10 years ago because I had a client who was a little bit nuts about graphics, and in the middle of a project, they actually paid me to spend a week experimenting with graphic file formats and quality and different outputs. For those of you who are consultants, these are the kinds of clients that you love because they just expand a project beyond where it started. I'm a consultant. But my experience is it works, and if it works, why not? If it doesn't work, then you go back to the more traditional model, GIF, and JPEG. And that seems to work. Okay, so having said that, let's actually dive down into some of the specifics in Flare, starting with this insert image dialog box. And there's a lot going on here, as there often are in dialog boxes in Flare. But you get a preview of the image over here, pick the image over here. Here's a list of previously used images. And then there's a bunch of things down here and over here. All right, so let me talk about these. On the general tab, there's that screen tip field. And if you type something in the screen tip, When the user hovers the mouse over the image, they'll get a little pop-up. It's like hover help. It's not really what it is, but it acts as if it is hover help. So if you need to create quick and dirty hover help, you just do that. You make that entry in the screen tip field. All right, below that, we have the alternate text field. And here's a question. How many of you have to support Section 508? Okay, small number. Anything else? WAI, WCAG. Okay, these are all formats designed to deal with people who have various physical handicaps, typically blindness, but I've seen things like people who get Parkinsonian tremors from the refresh rate of a monitor. It's rare, but it does happen. And here, what happens is, let's say I'm blind. The entry that you make for the alternate text field, this will specify the text that will be read by a screen reader and spoken aloud. So if I'm blind, or I've actually had clients who've had macular degeneration and they had windows zoomed up to something like 400%, which I thought was blinding, but it worked for them, and the system would talk to them, and it's reading this entry. All right. Little side note, in FLIR, there's one inconsistency in how this manifests itself. When you guys insert graphics, you know that it's asking you to enter, if you want, screen tip and alternate text. Have you ever noticed when you create a hyperlink that there's a screen tip field, but there's no alt field? Anybody notice that? The problem is just that. It's an inconsistency. There is no alt, which means you have to enter the screen tip. And what's a little confusing is that when you render the output and you look at the code, FLIR is using the screen tip as the alt. So in other words, it's sort of working around its own limitation here. All right? One other inconsistency. How many of you use cross-references in FLIR instead of hyperlinks? Anybody? All right, yeah, it's good to see. Cross-references are a very, very slick feature, much better than hyperlinks in many respects. If anybody's not sure why I'm saying that, ask me afterwards. The only problem with cross-references is that they don't give you the option of entering the alternate text at all. So that's an inconsistency, and you have to go into the code to enter the alternate text if you need to support 508 or the way. Anyhow, having beaten these two fields to a pulp, I think, style class, if you want to apply a custom style class to the image, in other words, you can literally create a new style class to replace IMG and use that. Have any of you ever done this? Really? Okay, I would love to talk to you two afterwards, because I do a lot of tailoring of images, but I've never created a complete custom style class. I could never think of a reason why I would do that. So I'd love to hear from the two of you why you did that. In any event, style ID. This is if you want to apply a subclass. And the common example here is thumbnail. And I'll touch on thumbnail in a minute. How many of you do thumbnailing now? Okay. Is anybody not sure what I'm talking about? Bear with me. Tab index. This is a really odd field in this dialog box, but does anybody remember the day when somebody might be using Windows but they would not have a mouse? Is anybody in that environment now? Maybe you've got an industrial application. Okay, one lonely person. And what this does is it lets you specify the order in which pressing the tab key will bounce you between different items on that screen. I have not used this in over 20 years, but it's there. And finally, apply alternate. This lets you specify a standard alternate text and apply it to all your images. All right, I have no idea why I would ever do this. If anybody does this, again, let me pick your brains after this is over. All right, other tabs. There's the size tab. And this pretty much does what you think it does, resize an image, and it lets you set its default size, minimum size, and maximum size. And this is for targets that use the default medium or a custom CSS medium. Could be a tablet medium, could be the mobile medium. It could be some custom CSS medium that you guys created as part of your style sheet. But however you do it, the entries that you make on that tab will control the size. All right, print size is exactly the same as size, but it's for print output, specifically for the print medium. All right, position. To control an image's position using the float feature, bear with me. Do any of you use float now? Again, just trying to get a feel for you guys. Anybody not familiar with what it is? I'll show you. Whoops. Okay. All right, thumbnail tab, which I keep coming back to just because it's kind of a cool feature. And borders and margins, which does just what it sounds like. Ditto for background. Okay. So you've got all these options. The problem is don't use them. Because if you use them, you're doing local formatting. And if there is such a thing as original sin in our world, it's local formatting. This will cause more trouble than almost anything else you can do when it comes time to take the project that you've worked on so lovingly and display it on a tablet or display it on a phone or something. So the problem is that you have to modify each image separately. So this is tremendously inefficient. And 99 times out of 100, you don't want to do this. I'll get to that one time in a minute. So instead, you want to use the IMG style class on the style sheet. I don't remember if there's a style sheet session presentation going on at the conference. Are any of you new to the style sheet editor? Anybody new to it? Okay. Those of you who use it, you're using it in the GUI mode? Are any of you using it in code view, in code mode? Good. All right. That's good. That figure has been growing slowly year by year, and you're doing exactly the right thing. You guys who are working in GUI, it's not a failing on your part, because as long as you work in the GUI, you're doing well. But if you can work in code, you can make Flare stand on its head. You can make Flare do jumping jacks. Tremendously powerful. And what you want to do here, all right, building's not rumbling, is it? Okay. So you want to use the IMG style. So here's the style sheet editor, and over here I have the IMG style highlighted, and below it I have one called thumbnail. It's a subclass. And little side note, you know, notice right up here, I'm saying show all properties. And you see everything that you're getting here? These are all the available property groups for the IMG. So this is good. Maybe. The property groups contain the same options that you'll find in the Insert Image dialog box, except by specifying those properties as part of a style, it's much more efficient because you can apply all those properties to all your images in one shot. So ideally, you'll work on a style basis rather than the local formatting. Do you need to apply different properties for different types of images? This is that 1 out of 100. This typically applies, in my experience, if you're doing print or PDF output. Do any of you do PDF output where you've got a lot of different images and you want them positioned, say, on the right-hand side of the screen, but you have to flow the text around the images differently, and each image is a little different, different size? I see several heads nodding. In that case, creating a custom subclass won't do you any good because you may have to create a custom subclass for each image. So in that case, grit your teeth and format each graphic separately. But ideally, you won't have to. So what you can do instead, as I say, is create a subclass. And here again on the style sheet editor, you notice here compared to the previous one said show all properties. This one says show assorted relevant properties. A lot of people, when they go back to here, I just backed up two slides, and you've got all these properties, all these functional groups, and it can be a little confusing finding the property that you want. So what you do instead is you select this option, show assorted relevant properties, which basically means show me only those styles that MadCap thinks I'm likely to use on a daily basis. And I tend to work this way because I find it simpler, and I'll work this way until there's a property that I can't find, and then I'll think, okay, you've got to show all the properties, and I'll find it there. All right, so image positioning. How many people position your images using tables with the borders turned off? Okay, everybody always looks kind of tentative when I ask this question. It's a bad thing to do for a variety of reasons. It works, which is one of those bad habits that we picked up from Word and carried over into Flare. It works fine. Create the table, hide the cell borders, and just insert the images in the appropriate cell, and you've got the exact layout that you want. Problem is, it's not cross-medium compliant. All right. What that means in English, of course, is if you're doing responsive output, you know that on a big monitor, you've got lots of space, but as you go to a tablet, the space shrinks. You go to a phone, space shrinks. And the problem is, if you use tables to position your graphics, what will happen is as the screen width shrinks below the width of the table, you're going to wind up with a horizontal scroll bar. All right. There's nothing wrong with horizontal scroll bars, although it's a bad thing to do, especially if you have vertical scrolling, because if you have vertical and horizontal scrolling, it's like trying to read a billboard through a paper towel roller. You're just going like this. And it's easy to lose track of what you're looking at. So you want to try to avoid using tables. Plus, on sort of a philosophical basis, you're using tables for non-table purposes. Tables were meant for tabular information, not as screen layout tools. So instead, you use these things called floats. And where do you find a float? Well, in the Insert Image dialog box, and again, this is local, so don't do this, but I'm just showing you where to find it locally. You select Position. And you've got all these options here. And the ones you're probably going to use are left, right, and center. And then you've got various other options like clear, vertical alignment. Vertical alignment is exactly what you think it is. If you say top, it goes to the top, you know, bottom, middle. But by using these features in combination, you can tell Flare where to position this image. And you're doing it programmatically. You're not using a table. So, for example, this is an image that I've inserted in between some text. Anybody here from Canada? Any of you guys from Nova Scotia? You recognize this? This is the Sackville, Nova Scotia waterfront. Sorry, little digression. Every once in a while, somebody recognizes this picture. I've inserted this, but I haven't positioned it yet. So it's just plopped. It's just plopped left aligned in between two paragraphs, but I don't want it there. I really want it right aligned so that it flows to the right of this paragraph of text, and this paragraph of text flows around it. So I'll do this. And I just told the system, do a right float. And what it does is, as you can see, it inserts the image here. The text is wrapped to the left. And it doesn't look as though there's anything different here, except that this is now inserted programmatically. So that if somebody comes along and says, no, we want those 500 images that you inserted to the right, we want them all moved to the left. Rather than moving all 500 one at a time, you just go into the image tag, the IMG tag, and you change float from right to left or whatever, and everything moves automatically. Okay, this is one of the greatest features you'll find for efficiency, style sheets in general, and this floats for graphics. Here's another example, a right float, except here. I added a 10-pixel left, right, and bottom margin, and it's not having that much effect, but if I back up, you'll see that the lines in this paragraph break slightly differently. So if I back up one screen, it's a slightly different break. In practice, probably what I should have done is use something like 40 pixels, which would really have made the effect visible. But what you're doing is really specifying how much space do I have to the left of the image, above the image, below the image, And just to add a little extra visual oomph, I added a 3-pixel solid border around the entire image. And I did that through, in this case, local formatting through the position tab and the borders tab. Okay, so again, it worked, but it's local formatting. So, as I say, this is useful, but it's still local, and we want to try to avoid local. So, I'm curious, do any of you work for a company where local formatting is actually banned, out-and-out banned? Okay, if you don't, you will. I'm starting to find software where I literally cannot do local formatting. It will not accept it and kicks my material back with error messages. I mean, these guys are serious. So that's still rare, but it's coming. Basically, we need to do it right. But the thing is, we can add the floats to the IMG styles. And you set the float, margin, and padding in the box group, the borders in the borders group. One of the biggest problems with the style sheet editor is just trying to figure out where is that property that I'm looking for. All right, and again, this will work if you just need a few IMG styles. If you need a lot, because again, you have lots of different pictures, different sizes, maybe they're right adjusted, right aligned differently, you want different spacing around them, this won't buy you much. But for general graphics work, this is what you want. All right, so that is really the basics. I'll say one other thing, and I won't even ask if anybody does this, because I suspect that some of you do, especially those of you who are new to Flare, and I don't want to make anybody feel awkward. If you come from Word, we often have a habit of capturing a screen. Maybe you're writing a user manual about a piece of software, and you need a screenshot. So we open the software, capture the screen, go into Word, and paste the screen in. Don't do that. If you do it, don't. Because what happens is you don't have an image. What you have is the image as part of the Word document, and you cannot modify it. What you need to do is capture the image, capture the screen, save it as an image file, and then insert that image into Word or now Flare. This will save you a lot of trouble going forward. It's a pain in the neck because you have the added step of saving this screen capture as an image, but it will be worth it going forward. So, all right, is this making sense? Any questions? Ma'am?
Why? Okay, I just basically write in the web and do a save and then take it out and I can't do that.
Mm-hmm. No. This lady captures the screen, saves it, pastes it right into Flare, and saves it as a PNG. Yeah, that's perfectly fine as long as you get the PNG out of it. You save it as some graphic file. The reason I tend to argue against doing that is that it's easy to forget to save the image as a PNG or to save the image separately, and then you wind up with just a pasted-in image. All right. So what you did is fine. If you remember to do that on a regular basis. Okay. Any other questions, comments, arguments? Okay. Let's go beyond the basics. Capture. Madcap Capture. How many of you use Capture? Regular tool? Okay. What do the rest of you use?
Snag.
Okay. Does anybody use something besides Snagit? Photoshop. Okay, so there's a bunch of them out there, but right now the most commonly used one is Snagit. All right, things evolve. It used to be that the most commonly used one was a tool called PaintShop Pro, and let's see, some of you remember it. I actually taught PaintShop Pro 20 years ago, which again means I've been doing this way too long, but Capture is Madcap's screen capture tool. So it will do a fine job for you. And what's also nice is that it's free. It was made a freebie add-in with Flare 12, and it is an excellent option if you don't have a screen capture and editing tool now, which is pretty unusual, or you don't like the one you have. You just find it clunky or something. The main features, and this is not a sales pitch for capture, although I like it. You've got a bunch of screen capture options. You've got a bunch of profiles where you can automatically define a group of properties and add those properties as a group when you do a screen capture. Okay, this is very useful. I use this all the time. You can add text callouts that Flare recognizes. One of the problems you guys may have had is maybe you're importing an old Word document or a FrameMaker document, and there are graphics with text callouts, and when you import it, the callouts don't come across. You've had that happen? And that's because the format used by those graphics, Flare doesn't recognize, and what you have to do is flatten the image to a single layer, basically taking a screenshot of it with the callouts, which works. But the only problem is, what do you do when you found a spelling error in the text in one of the callouts? You have to fix it and reshoot it. With Capture, you can actually add text callouts that Flare will recognize, so you don't have this problem anymore. And it will do auto update. So if I take a screenshot, paste it into a Flare topic, and then update the screenshot in Capture, when I save it, Flare will automatically grab the modified image and paste it into the topic. So it saves you from having to do that. It's a nice little feature, little time saver. If anybody's not using it, I can demo it at the end if anybody's interested. No worries. Okay, thumbnailing. This is one of my favorite things. I don't know why. But thumbnailing is sort of the answer to an argument that's plagued us for decades, which is, should we put images in our documentation? So does anybody know the answer to this? I don't. It started off as, we have images everywhere. And then somebody said, no, don't use any images at all. And we stopped using images. And then somebody said, no, that's silly. And it's gone back and forth. Should we use images? And as far as I'm concerned, the answer is yes, but as few as possible. Problem is, images still take up a lot of space. So what you can do is thumbnail an image. All right, and I hate using the word thumbnail as a verb, but you shrink it down to a postage stamp, and then you expand it to full size when the user does something. Maybe hover over it, click on it, something like this. So here's a thumbnailed screenshot, and it's closed. And when I, in this case, hover over it, it opens up like this. So this is good, because what a lot of people will do is, if you decide we don't have room for images, we don't want to include images, so you have a little note that says, there's a screenshot of the insert image dialog box. Click here if you want to see it. And oftentimes people will miss that because they're looking for an image. But if you put in a thumbnail, that's more recognizable by the user as being an image, and they're more likely to click on it. They're more likely to see it and click on it. Have any of you had this experience? Has anybody tested usability for text-based images versus thumbnail-based images? Try it sometime if you do usability testing. And I think you'll find that users are more prone to click on the image when they see the thumbnail. All right, so if you're going to do this, question is, do we want all the images thumbnailed or just some of them? And for those of you who do thumbnailing now, how many of you thumbnail all the images? Everything becomes thumbnailed, as opposed to you thumbnail certain categories of images but not all of them? Yeah, okay. I don't know what the right answer is, quite honestly. You do what works for you. But if you want all the images, you set it up for the IMG tag, and that applies to all the images. Alternatively, you create a subclass, and I just always call mine thumbnail. It shows no creativity whatsoever, but it's clear what this does. And then I'll define it. And I'll select the IMG style or my subclass. And right here, I don't know if you can read this. Here's my thumbnail subclass. And it's asking, okay, MC thumbnail, this is what action do you want to trigger the expansion of the thumbnail? So I just selected hover. Typically, I find it's either hover or pop-up click, but you do what you want. What size do you want it? What size do you want the thumbnail? And we'll say max height. So I'll say 80 pixels. And then there's another field below that, MC thumbnail max width. So it's asking you, if you set the height to X, what do you want to set the width to? And I don't know about you, I don't like having to calculate ratio after ratio of height to width. So what I'll do is I'll just say I want the maximum height set to 80 pixels, and I'll leave it to flare to calculate what the maximum width is, or vice versa. This way you're leaving it to the browser to do the calculations for you. Again, it saves time. All right, and then how do you apply it? You right-click on the image to which you want to apply the thumbnail, and you select Style Class, right-click down near the bottom of that drop-down menu, select Style Class, and you'll see IMG Thumbnail. Click on it. Works like a charm. Okay. I have found a couple of instances where it did not work like a charm, and I had to actually remove the image, reinsert the image, and reapply the thumbnail. And to this day, I have no idea what the problem was, but redoing it fixed the problem. All right. If any of you are programmers or married to programmers, you know that these are the problems that drive programmers crazy because they're not repeatable. But it works fine. Then we get to this, image maps. Does anybody use these now? Okay, a couple of lonely hands. Image maps used to be very, very common. Go back 10 years ago. I use them all the time for screenshots of dialog boxes where I would highlight each field or each button on the dialog box, and when the user hovered or clicked, they'd get a pop-up explaining what that thing did. Or if you have I used to do a lot of hardware documentation. If you have an exploded parts view of a machine, you make each item in the parts view a hotspot, and you click, and it pops up the specs for that part, something like that. Maps. Do any of you have long, complex flowcharts, something done in Visio, for example? Okay, if you do, the problem is you want to show the entire flowchart so the user sees the whole context of whatever the task is, but then each box is too small to be able to put any really much of any text in it. So what you do is you make each item a hotspot, and when the user clicks on it, they get a pop-up that explains what they're doing. All right, again, they're not used very often, but they are still useful. And I put this in because I think in the last 3 months, I've had three clients tell me they wanted to do image maps and couldn't figure out how to do it in Flare. So it's easy to do. What you do is you right-click on the image, and you select Image Map. And I combine several screens here, but you get the image in the Image Map editor right here. And basically, these options are saying, do you want to draw a rectangular hotspot, a circular hotspot, or a random-shaped hotspot? And I don't know if you can see it, but I have a little rectangular hotspot right here at the bow of the ship. So you draw that out, and you click on it, and you get this area properties dialog box, and which looks exactly like the create a hyperlink dialog box, because that's exactly what it is. Why it's called area properties, I don't know. It's one of those things left over from the early days. But you just pick whichever target topic you want. Here's the same options, and you're done. Works like a charm. Okay. Any questions about this? Again, yes, ma'am. Question, does it work in responsive layout? You know, actually, that's an excellent question, because this has fallen so far out of use that I don't know anybody who's done it and set it up in responsive layout. But I hate saying I don't know when somebody asks me a question. Would you catch me at the end, give me a card, and I'll test it, and I'll let you know? Excellent question. Thank you. auto-convert. Those of you who have graphics in old formats, maybe they came out of old WinHelp projects, or maybe they came out of older formats from something or other. Problem is, you want to be able to convert them to what Flare calls web-safe formats, and you could open each graphic in a graphic editor and save it in a different file format, but that's just boring. Or you could select a bunch and then convert them as a batch, but that's still boring. What you can do instead is use this generate web-safe option in the target editor on the advanced tab, and what this will do is convert any BMPs, WMFs, EMFs, TIFFs, TIFF to either GIF, JPEG, or PNG. And you don't need a graphic editor to do this. Flare will actually do this automatically for you as it generates a target. It's a nice little feature. And to do it, you just select this option on the Advanced tab and do the build. All right, and what's the result? Well, the converted images are in the output folder, and I say this because oftentimes when people use this feature, they will go back into the project looking for the converted images, and they won't find them. They're seeing the originals. The converted images are in the output folder. So here's the original, and you notice I have a BMP and a TIFF. In the output folder, they've both been converted to PNGs. Yes? Question, does that mean every time you convert it, it looks for the images in the target? No, because as we have said, convert it in the output, which means it's still leaving the originals back in the main body of the project. So this is also potentially really confusing, because you're going to be looking at this and saying, gee, I know I converted those images, but why am I still seeing the old formats back in the target, back in the body of the project? And it's because you converted them in the output. So if you use this feature, does this sound like something anybody would use? If you use this feature, what I would strongly recommend you do is you find the images in the output folder and copy them back into the project itself and then get rid of the old versions. Okay, it's tedious because you have to do it manually, but you do it once, and you're done with it. And you've just done some major cleanup in the project. All right. Yeah, Ray. Yeah, question, does it maintain resolution? I'll give you an it depends answer. Sorry. When I've tried it, it's worked, and it's maintained the resolution. I cannot say that I've tried it on every single possible permutation. So that's why I won't give you a firm answer. I'll give you a pretty firm answer. Yes, it does. All right. Yes. Yeah, question, if you copy the images back into the images folder under resources on the project, do you have to go back into the topics and update the images themselves? Yeah, you do. The trick there is if you're comfortable working in code, you use Flare's search and replace field feature, and you just do a global search and replace to replace the version of the graphic with a .bmp extension, just change .bmp to .png, and it'll do this across the entire project. Okay, that works like a charm. I do that all the time. And again, it saves me a lot of time. All right, getting a little short, so let me just come to this. Add the empty alt. This applies to you guys who need to support 508 or WCAG or WAI. And again, what happens is it will add an empty alt text for images that don't have an alt tag. And you may be thinking sensibly, why? What's the point? Well, it does this for images and for equations and QR codes, which get converted to graphics when you generate the output. Why do it? Well, if you want to be compliant with Section 508 or WAI or WCAG, you need the alt tag, even if there's no content, but you need the alt tag. You can also do a search for alt equals later on when it's time to actually enter the alt text in the first place. And also, for those of you who are generating output that's going to be public-facing and searchable by Google, if you read Google's search engine optimization instructions, one of the things they recommend is adding the alt tag to images to improve searchability. So you're going to want to do this if you're creating material that's going to be public-facing. All right, and here's the image of the code prior to applying it. And you see, I don't know if you guys can see this, but this just says here is the image.bmp, and then the image insertion tag ends. But when I look at it in the output, it's now alt equals. It's added the empty alt tag to all the image insertions automatically. This is a huge time saver. All right, auto size capture. This is handy if you add text in your callouts, but you then translate. And for those of you who translate, this may be useful. Here's an example. I did some work in Puerto Rico many years ago and got lost many times and learned to say, is this the road to Mayagüez? Which was, esta es la carretera para, whoops. That wasn't supposed to happen. So obviously, what happens when I make jokes about speaking Spanish? But the problem is the caption box didn't resize, and it clipped off the bottom word. So what you do is you turn that feature on, and now the caption box expands, and you can see all the text. Right? This is a particularly insidious problem if the caption box resizes and it accidentally clips off the last few words and you're left with something that looks like a real sentence. And I've had this happen to me. So this is a useful feature to use. And finally, remove images. Again, this is probably the most esoteric. If you have any images inserted in text paragraphs that wind up being used as headings in your print output, this will tell Flare to automatically remove those images. You might have a little icon graphic, and you decide that graphic is in a paragraph of text that I'm going to use as a heading, but I don't want the icon. Automatically remove the icon on output to print. Again, it does this automatically. All right, and as usual, it behaves a little differently for Word than anything else. I'm sorry. All right, so we are just about out of time, so let me ask, does anybody have any questions? Yes, ma'am.
For thumbnails, is there a particular image format that works best? Or
question is, for thumbnails, is there a particular image format that works best? I don't know. I've done them using GIFs, JPEGs, and PNGs, and they all worked. You might be able to see a difference. I can't. So as far as I'm concerned, any format works. All right. Other questions? Yes, ma'am. It's on the advanced tab of the target editor. Don't worry, there's a lot of stuff on the advanced tab. All right. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, the question was, if when I use thumbnails, do I have any sort of a visual cue or a verbal cue that tells users what to do? And the answer is, again, with apologies, it depends. I need to know who my audience is. Because for an audience of experienced computer users, I might say no, or I might have an introduction in the very first topic of the whole project, welcome to your project, and I'll say in this project you will see certain features such as thumbnails, and that's enough for you to understand that if you roll the mouse pointer over them, you get the shape change, aha, it's a link, click. On the other hand, I have done projects for people for whom my project was the very first time they'd actually used a computer. It's been a few years since that's happened, but that experience is fresh in my mind. And what I did in for every single thumbnail was I had a little icon that said, click here, with an arrow pointing to the image or something like that. Because, again, you just don't want to trust to the user to understand what cool thing you've done in the interface. It's a good question. So know your user and put in the appropriate cue. Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry.
So, I don't feel like that question would be up to the community if it hadn't, but do you have a general, I guess, number that you use for resolution when you're doing screen capture? Is there kind of a range that you recommend for most scenarios?
Yeah, the question is there, do I have a recommendation as to resolution? That I would, yeah, and you're right. The answer is it depends, but I'll tell you why. If I'm grabbing images for online output, I'll just use the default. I'll use 96. The problem comes in if I'm grabbing images for use in print. That's where it gets really ugly. And have any of you written books that show up on Amazon through CreateSpace? Anybody done this? Okay, I've written 8 books that are up on Amazon using this tool called CreateSpace, and the problem is it wants a minimum of 300 DPI, and it complains unless it gets 400. So the problem is the tools that we use traditionally are set at either 72 or 96, and we use them by default, but we have to remember now that if we're generating images, if we're grabbing images for use in print, we're going to want to reset the resolution of our monitors and the resolution of our screen captures, and there I would go as high as possible.
So
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, let's do this. We're out of time, so if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to talk to you now or throughout the conference. Otherwise, thank you for coming. I hope this has been useful.